Handing over a resignation letter takes about 90 seconds. The advisors who get burned on the way out almost never fumble those 90 seconds. They lose it in the weeks before, a forwarded spreadsheet, a contract they misremembered, a procedure they didn't know existed. Today, I'm walking you through the five things to settle before the letter, in order, plus the document mistake that turns a routine exit into a courtroom. Quick note before we get into it. Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker-dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different, so treat this as a map, not a set of directions. This one's for any advisor who has decided to leave or is close. By the end, you'll know the five decisions that determine how a resignation goes: the agreement, the protocol, the timing, firm property, and the letter, and exactly what has to happen on the day. Some scale first. Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. Most went fine, the ones that didn't usually failed the same way. The advisor treated the resignation as an emotional event when it's a legal and procedural one. Nobody gets sued over their feelings on the way out. They get sued over what they took and what they signed. Start with the agreement you actually signed, because it's the rulebook for your exit, and the version in your memory is friendlier than the version on file. You're reading for four things. Notice provisions. Some agreements require written notice a set number of days out, and a few carry garden leave terms that keep you on payroll, but away from clients while the firm responds. Restrictive covenants, where the distinction matters. A non-compete restricts where you can work, while a non-solicitation clause restricts who you can contact after you leave. And plenty of advisors are carrying a non-solicit without knowing it. Definitions of firm property and confidential information, which usually sweep in far more than you'd guess, including material you built yourself on firm systems. And the money that leaving puts at risk, unvested deferred compensation, and any unforgiven balance on a recruiting note, which generally comes due when you go. One wrinkle worth knowing: agreements change, policy manuals get updated without a signing ceremony, and the document that governs your exit is the current one. Pulling that full stack together is the first real task, and it's a job for a securities attorney. Most advisors don't have one on call, and that's exactly the point. Get one in your corner before the letter, not after something goes sideways. An attorney who reads advisor departures for a living can tell you in an hour what your firm's playbook will be. Second, the broker protocol. And I'll keep this to what it demands of you on the day itself, because we did a full episode on the protocol's history. The short version: it's a voluntary agreement among firms, more than 2,000 of them, as of the administrator's October 2025 list. And if both your old firm and your new one are signatories, you may take a narrow set of client information with you. The official protocol text spells out exactly five fields, and only for clients you personally served: name, mailing address, phone number, email address, and account title. That's the complete list. Everything beyond it is prohibited. No account numbers, no statements, nothing from the firm's files. Take a sixth thing and the protection is gone. Now the mechanics, because the protection is conditional on procedure. To stay covered, you resign in writing, delivered to local branch management, and you leave the firm a copy of the client information you're taking. And there's a two-list detail that trips people. The list you take has the five fields. The copy you leave with the branch has those same fields, plus the account numbers for the accounts you service. Account numbers go to the firm, never with you. Miss that, and you've either taken something prohibited or shorted the branch its copy, and either mistake surrenders the protection. One more condition: both firms have to be members on the day you move. membership shifts because firms can join or withdraw at any time. So you check the current list for both firms close to the day and you assume nothing. If either one isn't a signatory, the protocol doesn't apply. Your employment agreement governs alone, and the same letter and list can go from a well-worn procedure to a breach. Same physical act, different paperwork. Third, what you don't touch in the weeks before. Client lists, firm documents, anything that isn't clearly yours. The trouble here almost never looks like theft in the moment. It looks like preparation, forwarding a spreadsheet to your personal email just in case, printing statements to study at home, exporting a contact file because building the five field list later sounds tedious. Firm systems log all of it, and a download or a forward in your final weeks is the first thing the firm's counsel goes looking for when deciding whether to pursue a departed advisor. The protocol's design already answers the anxiety. The five fields are things you can assemble legitimately, and the taking happens at resignation in the open with a copy left behind. Anything gathered early outside that procedure has no protection at all. The property line is probably tighter than you think, and crossing it early is the most expensive shortcut in this entire process. Fourth, timing. Timing is mostly sequence and only a little calendar. There's real folklore about the right day of the week and the right hour of the afternoon, and none of it appears anywhere in the protocol's text. No day of the week rescues a resignation that lands before your new firm can actually receive you. What the sequence requires is concrete. The new firm's paperwork ready, your registration transfer prepared, the client information copy assembled correctly, the letter drafted and reviewed. The letter is the last item on the checklist, never the first. Timing has a money layer too. Deferred compensation vests on a schedule, and unvested balances are generally forfeited at resignation, so the gap between two candidate dates can be real money. If you came in on a recruiting note, the unforgiven balance usually comes due when you leave. Neither of those should surprise you on resignation day. Both are knowable months in advance from the documents in step one. And fifth, the letter itself. Very little goes in it. You're resigning, effective when, and if the protocol applies, it's delivered in writing to local branch management along with the client information copy. That's it. No reasons, no grievances, no long goodbye. The industry is small. Your former colleagues will still be in it, and the relationships you keep are worth more than any final word. By the time the letter lands, the day should already be boring on purpose. Contract read, protocol question answered by an actual lawyer, date chosen, property lines respected completely, in a written sequence for the day itself. Then the delivery takes its 90 seconds and you're on the other side. If you're anywhere near this decision, I put together a one-page resignation checklist that walks the five steps in order. It's free on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. And while you're there, the six-question assessment takes about 2 minutes and shows you which of the five you've genuinely settled and which still need a real answer. The advisors who do this gracefully aren't braver than you. They did the homework first, so the moment that scared them turned out to be boring, and boring in a resignation is exactly what you're going for. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.